Right, welcome to the latest episode of the Formula Scout podcast, and today we're joined by a special guest who shall introduce himself.
My name is Michael D'Orlando. I am a 20-year-old American from New York, and I just won the USF 2000 championship, part of the Road to Indy. That earns me a scholarship worth $405,925, I think. I might be off by a number. There's a lot going on with that, so, but that's a full scholarship to the next level Indy Pro, and what a year it's been. Have you been following much?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think for me, like following everything from F1 down to like Formula Ford and karting, we've had so many title fights that either were decided way too early or decided with drivers who weren't even there. But the racing in America has been so, so close. And that USF 2000 finale was crazy. Like, one of the best of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it really has been. I'm actually a firm believer that, I mean, as much as the US sometimes gets a bad rep by fans, the USF 2000 category is really stacked. And every single year that I've been racing it, it's been just extremely close competition. Back and forth with the spec suit, with the spec cars and all the stuff, and a 2-liter Mazda. They, they're not the fastest things ever, but they're super competitive and it really grates for some great racing. So I'm quite happy to say that I was the champ of what I believe to be one of the hardest, series in, formula cars, on a ladder of formula cars. So I'm like kind of ecstatic about it.
Yeah, I think maybe the best way to describe how competitive it is in Europe and Asia and basically everywhere else, the live timing systems have three like decimal points, like it's 0 point and then you got three. In America, they have to use four. Yep. Because it's that close.
Yep.
Which is like,
yeah, there's been a couple of qualifying sessions where I got nicked by like more than like less than a thousandth, and I'm like, oh, are you kidding me?
It's just crazy close. Going back to the start of the year, like you came very close to the title in 2021 as well. So was the plan, regardless of the title outcome, well, actually, I guess if you won the title, you would have gone up. But, you know, were you always looking at doing another season in USF 2000 for 2022?
Actually, no. So at the end of 2021, we spent a lot of time trying to like raise the funding and all that stuff, because not only that, we're not like, we don't have too much cash flow in and out of our family. That plus my brother Nicholas also races in the same series, so we're kind of a handful on, you know, the cash flow kind of things. So I think that was probably the main reason that we stayed in USF 2000 another year, was because we needed the championship to go up. But at the same time, my team, Legendary Cape Motorsports, they've won I think 13 or 14, 14, yeah. Championships in USF 2000, so they're, you know, they have the experience and they have the knowledge. So they said, you know, I think it's not going to be a hindrance by staying in USF 2000 for another year. And actually, I think you'd learn just as much in another year as USF 2000 as you would if you moved up to Indy Pro. And then that plus you have a better chance at winning the championship. So obviously going into it, I was kind of a little bit bummed that I had to stay in it for one more year. But, you know, learn what I can as the season goes. And I totally did. There's a lot of realizations that I've come to, that a little mistake here or there that could have cost me a championship. But you know what? It's racing. And but yeah, that was pretty much the reason why we stayed.
And, you know, it's quite rare for a driver to stay with the same team for kind of 3 or 4 years at the same level, or even like going up levels, because often because you've got totally different cars, you have to join totally different teams. But how has that relationship with Cape, you know, like grown over the years? How close are you to those guys? And have you had like the same engineer every season, or has it been a bit of rotation on that front?
As for the engineering wise, the Dominic and Reggie, his son, both engineer, and then Nicholas kind of runs the team. So we've always had the same engineer, just being the team owners. Dominic, and my relationship with them has been great. Like in the first year, it was kind of like a little bit rocky. I didn't really have the trust in them. I knew they had a fast car, but like I still had to work on my driving, and I still had to you know, working on the trust in the team. And then the second year I finally got it. We, you know, we actually set two qualifying records, one at Mid Ohio and one at New Jersey Motorsports Park. And I don't think either of them are going to be broken anytime soon. But like in terms of last year, it was that last year could have been the year that I won the championship, but you know, because of everything that happened, I feel like we had to do another year, and that only helps. So now, like, I text him every now and then. And, I text him actually quite often. I see him. I feel like I've been part of the family for 3 years. So I'm actually super, super glad that I got the capes and to put effort behind me and all that stuff. Because not only have we grown as a team, but as friends and all of that stuff. So even though. Yeah, the whole idea of racing is to, you know, get to your goal. You always have to. You can't forget about the people that you meet along the way. And the Capes are awesome guys. I love them.
And one interesting aspect of your first season with them was obviously that first win, and that it was so close at the front that you were fourth in standing. Second year, you won the Lucas Oil Raceway event, and obviously that circuit's now been renamed. It's Indianapolis Raceway Park. You've now won the Freedom 75 twice, which is, you know, it's so different to every other round on the USF 2000 calendar. So how did you, I guess, A, prepare for that, and B, how come you were just so dominant there this year? Like, it was a crazy big win.
I think I pretty much did the same thing that I did last year. So, like, it seems to me that it's all really about qualifying and car setup. So when you do a lot of prior testing, like we always do 1 to 2 days prior to the a testing at Lucas Oil or IRP now. That's like the key into getting the car set up. But I think in reality, the majority of that race comes from qualifying. So what you can get out of it, and then you do your out lap, and then you do two laps to, and it's the fastest average of two laps, which puts you to where you qualify. So I feel like the thing that I've found with oval racing, especially in qualifying, especially on a short oval like Lucas Oil, where you're using the third lane the entire time and you only have like half a lane before you hit the wall, it's more of just like overcoming fear of like what happens if I push it even more. And that's kind of what it's been for. I figured it out in 2021. Like, you just kind of have to send it. Like, I don't really like saying this, but like, you have to have serious cojones just for qualifying. You go out there, your warm-up lap should be a qualifying lap, even though your tires are cold. You have to throw the car around like and make sure that everything is set for those two laps, and that's really all it is. And then with 2021 and 2022 getting the pole, and then I think this year was actually by quite a margin, that really just puts you in a great position for the race. The only thing you have to worry about is slower cars that you're catching. And then they don't really put up much of a fight either way. And then the guy behind you has the aero wash, and then they're using more of their tire. So when you're out front, you really have more of an advantage because you're kind of in control of the entire race. And like, especially if you're out front, you don't want to like, you know, run away the whole time because you use all your tires. So at the end, there could be that last little bit where second place comes in with a fresh tire and, you know, gets you at the end. I feel like it's more if you stay just in front of the car behind you for the entirety of the race, they destroy their tires, and then you win. That's kind of how it seemed to me this year, is that was my strategy at least.
Yeah, and for people who aren't familiar with the track, it's a really short one. I think it's only like two-thirds of a mile, so you know, like on qualifying you've only got 2k to get the tire heated up and like through the full heat cycle. So it's, you know,
it's really short. It's hard on tires, and then you're not only that. It's not a normal oval. You'll go down to the bottom for like a typical outside, inside, outside like racing line. You're staying in the top lane the entire time.
Yeah, it's high commitment. Absolutely high commitment.
Oh, very high commitment. Very high commitment.
Yeah. And because of like, I guess, pandemic, St. Pete was at the end of the 2020 season, then kind of went back to its traditional date, 21 and 22. And then this year you got a second street circuit as well. So how's the preparation for those events? And obviously you can have more of them when you go out to the next level. So how have you found St. Pete and Toronto so far?
St. Pete has always been a very, a favorite of mine I mean, I've only driven two street courses, so I can't really say that much. But I love St. Pete. The environment, the kicking off a season at a wonderful city like St. Pete, just a, you know, it's really a vibe, and it's just it's good feelings all the way around. As for the racetrack, it's a little different. It's not just all 90-degree corners. I mean, both of them, neither one is, but you get to like a whole back section where it gets super tight, and then even though it's not super bumpy, like you have getting as close as you can to the wall every single time is just to get those like last tenths out of the last hundredths out of the lap is just really fun at St. Pete. But Toronto was a whole different story. That track is bumpy, so bumpy, and especially going into like turn eight, I think it is, right before the pit in, there's like a whole different tarmac change, and it just gets super bumpy. And that's actually where I made the pass on Miles Rowe. If you've seen that one, you'll know which one I'm talking about, where he didn't want to give up the spot, and then he's like, "I'd rather run into Michael than hit the wall," and it just popped me up in the air. But I don't know what he was thinking about that one. I was a car ahead. He should have given up a spot. But you know what? It's in the past. But I think for sure the Toronto is definitely a fun course, and although we didn't quite have the pace at it this year, especially because Pabst had a really good car in the last two races, didn't do everything I could in both of the races, and you know, just didn't work our way. Two fourth place finishes wasn't really where we wanted to be, but you know what? It was consistent, and it was consistent enough to allow me to get one last blow into Portland.
Yeah, and like I can't quite remember in 2020, like IndyCar shortened its actual race weekends, but I particularly noticed this year that like USF 2000 even raced on Fridays. Like so much of the track action was happening earlier in the weekend, so there's less IndyCar rubber being laid down. Was that something you noticed a little different to last year, or was it for you guys, you know, it didn't change the track too much running almost all the sessions, you know, quite early on?
It was consistent. It was nice because whenever you have the IndyCar rubber there going down, obviously the track's going to get faster depending on the outdoor conditions. If you get IndyCar rubber out and it's like 105 degrees, I don't know what that is in Celsius, I'm sorry.
I'll do a quick translate. 40 degrees. That is hot. That is hot.
if it's like 40 degrees out and the IndyCar rubber's down, it gets super gooey and it gets super slick. And it gets greasy, so on it might be a little bit slower than if it was less gripped up, less rubbered. So it was actually a little bit more consistent throughout the year that, you know, there wasn't much changes between sessions, and you could kind of have, if you had one setup, you know, it would work throughout the rest of the weekend. So it was nice to have a little bit more consistency, but I will admit I kind of miss having the IndyCar rubber down for at least the last two races because it becomes so fun and the track gets so fast.
Yeah, I guess the car's gonna be on rails as well when the track's kind of got that level of grip. Wow. Following the IRP weekend, you then had Road America and Mid-Ohio, which both had like their ups and downs, and I think they were key points in the title race. At that point, it was still kind of like a five-way title fight with Billy, Jagger, obviously Miles as well, and Jace. Like.
And Jace.
And the battling between you guys on the track was so close. I think it was Road America race one where or Mid-Ohio where it was like 10 times you were trying to overtake Jace, and it was, you know, getting pretty hectic.
Yeah, that was Mid-Ohio. Road America was a little off because in race one, I don't remember what happened at the start, but I ended up getting shuffled back. Because I mean, when you're starting on pole at Road America, it gets a little hectic. Especially with the long straights, and you're just pretty much like looking in your mirrors the entire time. So I didn't know how to do it in the first race. So I ended up shuffling my way back, and then I got into it with Billy. I don't know how he spun me around from the outside. Which, you know, but my head wasn't in the right place for that race. But then ending up coming back in first place, and the second one was my maiden win at that track. So it was definitely a really solid one. But Mid Ohio was a different story with the three races there. I had an incident with Miles in the first race where he nicked off my front wing, and I had to come in for a pit and go out again. And then obviously finishing second to him with on finishing under caution. I could have had him in that last lap, but I never got it. But you know what? That's racing. That's all racing, and obviously the win. But you know that race where I got second to Miles, it's really tough when you're facing two teammates because they're not going to fight. They're just going to shuffle you back. So when I'm going into turn four, and both of them go up on the inside of me, like, it's so hard to defend that because I can't just slot in behind the next one. They're just right, like bumper to, I guess bumper to bumper, but I guess front wing to rear attenuator. And it's like, you know, trying to maneuver your way through is just a pain in the ass when you have two of the fastest cars on track, well, minus me. But that Mid-Ohio was a really rough weekend. And normally it's my best because I'm always really quick at Mid-Ohio. So it was a little bit of a change of events and then ended up getting the win in the end. But, you know, that's there's been a lot of exciting races. But I don't know. Like I said, some of the incidences, like in the race one at Road America and race one at Mid-Ohio, if I didn't have those, then I probably would have been leaving a championship going into Portland, which I wasn't. So there's a lot of those things that I could learn from.
Yeah, and at the time it was a swing of like in the points lead, then bad race down to third, then back into the points lead, then down to third. Like,
yeah,
really crazy to watch. And Mid-Ohio as well, your record there, like 2020, I think you got three podiums there, including a win. 2021, obviously you had the two poles at the very end of the season, which were rapid, and I think four podiums in total at the track, including two wins.
I had the one weekend that we had over July 4th, I had two wins in a second place.
Yeah, and then this year, and two poles, a win, and a second as well. What makes the track so, you know, like, why are you so quick there, basically?
I see Mid-Ohio, it seems to be more of a driver's track than any other. So, like, yeah, you have your long straights. So if someone's, you know, doing a little bit of something to get a little faster on the straights, there's not much of them. Most of the time is gained all through corner four through 13, and especially through corner one because that's so high speed. So like, it relies less on the car and more of just how you drive the track. And I really seem that like, I think Mid-Ohio is more of a baseline for good drivers. So if you have like me, you have Miles, you have Chase, and then any other, and then the year before you had Kiko Porto and like, and a couple other drivers, and like you can tell the difference between like, you know, who's just got that little bit more in terms of pace than everyone else does. And I feel like Mid-Ohio is definitely where my you know, a driver's track, I feel like that's where I excel. So even if I don't have the setup or the equipment, I feel like that's, you know, it's always going to be a little bit more of a baseline for everyone. So it's just, you can only get so much out of the car. So it's, you have to make up the rest in driving. And that's why I believe Mid-Ohio is probably really good for me because it's so much of a driver's track.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a roller coaster as well. Like there's not huge, huge downs and ups, but like mid corner, you've got, you know, elevation change, which is always going to be super tricky for keeping a car, you know, like where you want it to be going.
Especially like turn nine, like if you get into out of six, you have the roller coaster where you go left up the hill and down right, and then a short brake zone, go up the hill, then down the hill over turn nine. Like half the time you got to use the dirt on the inside apex. And then even then, like you're just like hoping that you don't dip a tire on the exit. And I don't know, the track's super fun.
Yeah. And watching it as well, it's just always crazy, crazy racing there. After the Mid-Ohio weekend was obviously Toronto, and we kind of discussed that. Then that Portland finale, third in the points, then you end the weekend as champion, and you'd gone four races without a podium, so a bit of a dry patch. What were your feelings going into that very last race that was going to decide everything?
Well, you mind if I talk a little bit about the weekend first?
Yeah, sure thing.
Because this was the weekend. And you know, it's funny because like, so going into the weekend, I feel like we had a good car, but my Miles, Jace, and Pabst all had a leg up on us. So they figured out something in the car that just made them blisteringly quick, and we don't even know what it is. But we got in, and they're like an average of 3/10. They're like over 3/10 of a second faster than us, and that's odd for USF. Like I don't think anyone's ever been that far off.
Yeah, I can't remember seeing gaps usually that big.
and well, I guess. We don't see it either. So they definitely figured something out, and everything kind of just meshed well with that car. So either that, or you know, maybe the drivers just had it right. I'm not sure. And then the only time I can really see it is back when in 2020, when Christian Rasmussen started dominating the first half of the year, like at Road America. Like he had things right. So it kind of gave me a little bit of a throwback to that. But everything we did, just we always had a maximum, and that maximum was never, you know, past paced. It never was. So we get into qualifying, and I end up qualifying ninth. And then this is like detrimental. Like I get back and I'm like, I don't know where the time was. I don't know where any of this was. But you know, Nikki Hayes ended up getting what, fourth? And
fifth,
obviously,
I think.
It was
yeah.
possible with the Cape car. Obviously, it was possible with the Cape car. So I just had to figure out what to do and where to get a little bit faster. So we get into race one, and I just work my way up a little bit, try and get as far as I can, and you know, just try and be a little bit be smart. It's the last race weekend; everyone's going to be like checkers or wreckers. They're going for wins again, every single position possible. So I knew there was going to be carnage, and every single race there was carnage. So it's more of just about, you know, being that slithery snake, trying to get through all the madness that's happening, especially like races one and two. That's all I had to do. Even though there's a little bit of a mishap with Nikki Hayes in turn four, I ended up getting right back to where I was anyways. So, I mean, it wasn't a bad race. And then you have race two, where the same thing happened again, except some miles went straight over top of someone. I have no idea what happened with that. But you know, I ended up going to the outside for turn one on the start, and then I just see miles completely in the air, and I'm like, all right, time to break and not get in this. And then I ended up coming out like what, fourth, and I just stayed there the entire race. And then finally you get into the last race, and then I went from a 23-point deficit to 7 points, I think it was 7 or 6 points for the lead. And there's three people within that. So there's like Miles, and then Jace 1 or 2 points behind. And then there's me like 5 points behind Jace. And this was the race. Everyone knew. It's like, this is, anything can happen. Any one of the top three can win after this race. Any one of them. And going in, I started sixth place because of the rules and how qualifying works. So my second fastest lap was quite good, and they moved me up. But I started sixth, and then the same thing happens again where Jace got spun out, and I don't remember what happened, but Miles got caught up in that too, and his front wing got off. So Jace DNF, and Miles had to come in with a front wing. He went into a safety car, and then they got back out, and Miles was blisteringly quick this race. So all I had to do was get out front and just hope that he didn't catch anyone, catch up the spots to get to nick me in the championship. And that's kind of what we did. We went into the restart. I passed past Nikki into corner one, and then you know, the first place was gifted to me because Thomas Naveau ended up causing the whole thing, and then I just stayed out front even with an extremely oversteery car, because I was holding on for dear life that race. Like, not only do you have to deal with the emotions that like you're gonna be champion this whole thing, and the next thing you know, like, you have to deal with a car that's oversteery as hell then like you're just holding on for dear life the entire time. So it was one hell of a race, and I finally got in, crossed the checkered flag, and I started pumping my hand in the air, and they're like, you're champion. And I'm like, I didn't believe it until I got in. I did not believe it. I thought Miles nicked me somehow. So then it's like, you know, the usual, I don't even know how to describe the emotions, but if you could just imagine your life goal, and then you just accomplished one huge milestone, and that's just what it felt like. I was on the verge of tears.
Yeah.
I was crying, actually.
And like watching that race, it was, because it was hard to tell, you know, what actually caused that opening lap chaos at first. We could see that Jace got spun, and then something happened with Miles. But because we're all looking at the front of the field, like, we didn't see really what was happening behind. And then obviously, yeah, Thomas got his penalty, and craziest finale of the year. I think if I was doing like an award show and choosing like the race of the year for like biggest drama, that would probably win.
Portland. Yeah. Oh yeah, I totally agree.
And like that first corner is like, I wouldn't call it infamous, but everyone knows that drama happens there, like,
oh yeah,
guaranteed.
You have an extremely long straightaway into like such a heartbreaking zone. It's gonna be it's chaos.
Yeah, and there's often a lot of dust there as well, isn't there? Like, it's quite horrible offline at that corner. So.
Oh yeah, there's no grip on the inside too, so it just becomes an absolute like wreck show.
Yeah. Obviously, Formula E's announced they're going to Portland, but I don't know if it's going to be on that track, which would be utter chaos, or if they're going to try and land in the city. But, I think it'd be interesting whichever way they go. Since the season's
I think so.
finished, what have you been up to? Obviously, planning racing, but obviously, you've got other things to do outside of racing as well.
Well, other than, going out and talking to every team that I possibly can for deals and everything, and working with the series on scholarship. I've been I've just been going from racetrack to racetrack, and then on my free weekends and doing college and get down here in Charlotte, North Carolina. So it's been, it's been quite busy. So it's not like I'm sitting my feet up the entire time. I've been busting my hump then for since the end of Portland anyways. And then now it's getting even worse with everything piling up and then Christmas happening. And then I have to this, the whole deal with sponsors and appreciation stuff. And then you get into Christmas where you have to give gifts to your family and all that stuff. And I'm like, I have finals to do. And then it's just all piling up.
Relatable feeling. And because the Indy Pro car, and obviously is now it's called a US F Pro 2000 car, is based on the same tub as the US F 2000 car. Like, as a driver, how much difference in preparation, like how different is it going to feel when you step up to the series? Because basically they are quite similar vehicles at the end of the day.
The entire tub, the entire chassis is the same. The only thing is that like you get a new differential that you can play with. You have a little bit more aero, and then your rear tires and the USF become your fronts, and then you get larger rear tires. So naturally, you'll just be getting more. You'll be getting more lateral grip. You have more aero, more braking capacity. So it becomes just like the same car, just a little faster in every category. So in terms of what I've heard from drivers, because I've still yet to test it, it has been the exact. It's pretty much almost the exact same. Like you hop in and you can figure it out in two test sessions.
And I think
So
that's also interesting.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of drivers who go from Indy Lights to IndyCar, and they always talk about the jump from Indy Pro to Indy Lights being the biggest jump. Then going from Indy Lights to IndyCar is quite small, and then also going from USF to Indy Pro is quite small. It's an interesting setup of the American system compared to the European one. And although obviously Formula Regional is in America as well, like. The way that there is such a big gap between F4 and regional here, and then a huge gap between regional and F3 as well. Like, drivers have to kind of relearn things between each step, which is always quite interesting to see. Can you
It
give any
is. I
clue
feel like
on,
it's nice for. Oh, sorry. Go back.
can you give any clue on who you might be driving for, or like when you're first gonna get in the car, like potentially during this winter?
I'm gonna leave it until after. We're gonna. I think we're staying until after New Year's because of, obviously budget constraints and everything else that we have going on. So it's not. I'm gonna say we have more other priorities because it's definitely the highest on the priority list. But in terms of what we can do, we're kind of limited. So as for teams, I'm gonna leave that a surprise because I'm talking to a couple of teams. But I don't want word to go around like Michael's doing this, Michael does that, because there's already rumors, and I'm like, I didn't create any of these. So I'm just gonna let people deal with figure it out on their own. And then when the announcement comes out, I want to see if they're right or wrong. So, a little bit of suspense for what team I'm gonna go with.
And a final question, which is one I've put in a slightly different way to Michael Andretti and guys who actually ran Indy Lights and also ran some promotions. The Indy Lights has become Indy Next, Indy Pro's become USF Pro. To us, these are announcements that kind of came out of nowhere, wasn't really explained. As a driver in the paddocks, and obviously, like when you write these as initials, USFP 2000 is so close to USF 2000. Has that actually made it a little different, difficult, like trying to not to say attract sponsors for Indy Pro, but differentiating almost the product, if you get what I mean. Because it now sounds like it's very similar to US 2000 rather than like a distinct higher product.
So in like if I'm going to talk about it and I'm like in verbiage, if I'm talking to you face to face or like anyone over the phone, I guess the way we, you know, really differentiate it is USF juniors, we just call juniors. USF 2000, we just call USF. And then Indy, or USF Pro 2000 now, or Indy Pro, we'll just call Pro. And that's kind of how everyone's been differentiating it over here. But I mean, I think losing the Indy name is definitely a little bit of a detriment to people that don't really pay attention too much, because then they're like, oh, it's not associated with Indy. But it, in reality, it is. If you just look a little bit deeper into it, then you see that it was Road to Indy, and then it's still doing, it's still not changing, but it's just a rebrand. So, I mean, it's going to be a little bit tough to get that, like, first eye and first, like, image of someone is like, yeah, they're not Indy, but in reality, like, you'd have to explain it every time. Be like, yeah, it is. It's technically the Road to Indy, but it's not called that anymore. So it's a little bit more of a hassle just having to explain it to people. But in terms of like how you'd actually differentiate it, yeah, it's just juniors, USF, and pro. That's kind of how we say it.
Yeah, that's interesting, because like as media as well, when we want to, you know, just explain to a reader that it's USF Pro, we don't want to then have to write that full explanation that it's on the road to Indy, although it's not technically the road to Indy anymore, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Like, it's become
That's where it becomes hard, because like, how do you put it in writing that it was the road to Indy, but it's like not anymore, but like
it is.
You just have to like go on and explain it.
Strange one. Anyway, thanks for your time, Michael, and can't wait to see who you end up signing with for next season.
Sweet. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk to you.
Cheers. Adios.
Missed the whole thing. All right. Have a good. I don't know. Have a good Christmas, I guess.
Yeah. You too. Bye.
All right.